another edition of our special series on the Lehigh Valley with Love podcast. I'm your host, George Wacker, and we are interviewing as many candidates for PA7 as possible. And today we are lucky enough to have the wonderful Carol Obando-Durstein join us to talk a little bit about why you're running for Congress and, of course, what you love about the Lehigh Valley and living here. So, first of all, I want to say thank you, of course, for giving us some of your time. And I wanted to learn more about you and why you are running for Congress.
First off, thank you, George, for this opportunity to share a little bit more about who I am, why I'm doing this with your audience. I am doing this because I am frankly fed up with watching working families struggle to make ends meet. Some of them are choosing between heating and eating while politicians make their life worse and don't prioritize them. And that's what I was seeing with Ryan McKenzie. And yeah, I'm also running because I'm an immigrant. And what I'm seeing right now is horrific. I'm seeing people who look like family members being targeted. And it's not a crime to be Latino in America, but it feels like that these days.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you saw one of, we just had a, you did see, because I saw a comment from you. We had the video from the Puerto Rican club go wild for Bad Bunny, and it was amazing. And it's just great to even just be a part of that.
I was in there. I was.
Were you in there? You were there?
I was there.
What was the vibe?
I wasn't going to watch. I was not going to watch Bad Bunny by myself and just with my, you know, immediate family. I needed to be in community. So I went there.
That's so fun. I didn't know you were there. I was watching. I was on my couch because I am not as fun as you, apparently. What are you hearing from people in the Lehigh Valley? What is the biggest day-to-day financial stress you hear about? And what would your approach be at the federal level?
I'm hearing that folks are struggling to make ends meet and pay for the essentials of life. More specifically, housing, healthcare, groceries, utilities, and childcare. So those are the items that I hear that folks are really struggling to pay for. And we know that that's the case because I hear about it, but we also have the United Way, who has a report. They have a report, an annual report, where they mention ALIS families, and those are asset limited, income constrained, employed. They're doing everything right. They're working. They're struggling to make ends meet. And the report found that 41% of our district families are struggling to pay for the essentials. So that's the equivalent of like 124,000 households.
That's crazy, which leads us to one of the parts that is very stressful. I'm assuming you support extending the ACA premium tax credits, but talk a little bit more about that. Should it be permanent? How should it be paid for? Can you talk a little bit about healthcare?
I should tell you that healthcare is always something that's very personal to me because I actually, when I started my career and I was working, leading nonprofit organizations, community-based organizations, I had someone who was close to me who died. She died at the age of 22 because she couldn't afford the healthcare she needed. So this topic is not abstract or political to me. It's real. It's life and death. I also have a friend whose family was bankrupted because of healthcare costs. So again, not political, not abstract, it's real. I do believe that the subsidies should be extended. And because healthcare is a top priority, it impacts, you know, households, it impacts the economy. If folks stay employed because they can prevent illnesses before they turn into stage 4 cancer, for example, this is good for everybody. Oftentimes, I talk about how decisions impact everyone. So even if you're healthy and you're young, a lot of times we're a car accident away from a catastrophe that can put us in the hospital and can set us back enormously. We have cancers left and right. Folks are are being affected by cancer at an earlier age than ever before, than anything that I remember growing up. So this is why healthcare should be a priority. It impacts our economy. It is good to have a populace that is healthy, that can access care at the early stages of an illness instead of having to wait when it's advanced and then it's hard to treat or, you know, terminal.
Yeah. I don't want to talk too much about myself here, but just like as a personal thing, you're right. You feel invincible, maybe some people for a while. You don't have to use healthcare, but then when you need it and you really need it, and it's like choosing between paying rent and possibly getting healthcare, that's just not something that we should be putting people, you know, subject to.
Exactly. And I'm a mom. Yeah. So we know our kids depend on us. They depend on us to be healthy, to be there for them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I put myself in other people's shoes, and I know how important it is to fight for healthcare, because I remember my friend, I remember my other friend, well, first friend who died, the other friend whose parents were bankrupted. And I talk to people all the time about the impact that this is having and the fear that they have that they can't afford healthcare. They're going without, they're scared to death that something could happen this year and they don't have healthcare to be able to address it.
You know, our district, Pennsylvania 07, the 7, is not on the border, but we are definitely affected by federal immigration policy. You touched on it a little bit. What should enforcement look like in practice? And what should happen with legal pathways and work authorizations? And like what's going on right now doesn't seem to be working. What should the approach be?
This is another matter that's personal to me because I'm an immigrant. I came here at the age of 3. With parents who lived through a violent civil war in Colombia and sacrificed everything for a shot at the American dream. I also have family that have finished their asylum process. I have friends who are DACA recipients. So I am touched by this in so many different ways. I also go to a church that has a lot of immigrants who are part of the service. I go to a Spanish service at the Cathedral Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem.
Yep.
We know that we need a fix. Republicans and Democrats agree on that. We need to fix the immigration system. But what we need to do is to ensure that's legal, the fix is legal, effective, and humane. And I always underscore humane because I am not seeing any humanity in what's going on right now with immigration. What I see is cruelty. It is racial profiling. It is defying the laws. It's a ICE system that's unaccountable, and it's just not working the way that it should. But of course, I believe in secure borders. I don't want just anyone coming in. I don't want terrorists coming in, but this is not making us safe. This is creating more chaos and confusion and cruelty.
I mean, you said amongst, like, there's people in the community who have never had to think about something like this before who are now looking over their shoulder, or, you know, it doesn't seem.
And Latinos are, even if they're documented, they just are. Sure. I mean, even if they're even Puerto Rican and they're citizens, but there's a racial profiling that's happening. Mm-hmm. People are getting picked up and just disappeared just for looking Latino. That's not right. That's illegal. There's no way around that. So that's the pervasive fear that we're seeing in immigrant communities. Do you want me to maybe elaborate a little bit more about legal, effective, and humane looks like? It means more immigration judges, more support staff for the courts, modernize the courts, and don't keep people in limbo. It's opening up the DACA applications and making it easier for them to go to school, to contribute without fear. I have a friend who didn't even know that she was undocumented because she came here at the age of 2. I mean, I came at 3. I wouldn't have known if I was undocumented. So this is what's happening to countless people, and it shouldn't be like that. We need to also process the asylum cases faster. There's a lot we could be doing to ensure that we have a system that's legal, effective, and humane.
Right. No matter who's in charge, right? Like, no matter who's in charge, that's what we should be
doing. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
At a 2021 town hall, Susan Wilde said, "I don't have a problem with warehouses being here. I just don't want to become the land of the warehouses." And now, 5 years later, we're looking like the land of the warehouses already. When you look at some of these, and I know that a lot of this is on the township level, it's a local level, a lot of these governments making these decisions. But what can you say? What is there anything that the federal government can do to slow some of this stuff down?
Since you mentioned Susan, she actually endorsed me on day one, and she's mm-hmm. the reason why I decided to do this. She asked me to do it, and she believed that I was capable, and I said, yes, I can do this. I have the background to do this. But we're different people. And as an energy engineer, I actually worked at an electric utility, and I helped to connect companies to the grid. Some of them were warehouses, and most of the ones that I worked on were renewable energy companies. So I can tell you this, that right now, the Trump administration had an executive order around AI, and that, you know, ties to data centers. So he Correct. Had this executive order that said that it is illegal for states to regulate AI, and that the federal government could sue states. And I think that's the wrong approach. So I do not believe in a top-down approach that squashes, you know, anything that the state or municipality has to say. So what I think we need to always have is a robust, resident input to ensure that folks on the local level can decide what's best for themselves and their community.
Right. I mean, I know like some of the worry is that you have these huge warehouses that are taking up all these resources, and they're not even employing anybody. You know, it's not even like, well, we can deal with some of that because we have 100 jobs there. You know, mm-hmm. it's like a robot and three guys with a mop. You know, it's a little bit worrisome as well. Like, will the communities get something in return?
Yeah. Yeah. We need a robust stakeholder process to mm-hmm. ensure that every person at the local level has an opportunity to voice their concern, and that the decisions are made engaging the community at every stage of the process.
Okay.
I've always believed that. And I even went to school. So before I became an engineer years ago, my first master's from Penn State was community psychology and social change. Like, I believe that at my core, that our government works, and at every level, when we engage the public, yeah. when we don't obscure decisions, when we don't make decisions behind closed doors, that creates mistrust, and it, you know, they're not bought in. The local community is not bought in. So whether it's a data center or a warehouse,
if you're talking in a vacuum, there may be a community that says, hey, we would enjoy this. We would like this. There's benefits for us, mm-hmm. et cetera. But then you've seen different warehouses, like there was just a recent example in Easton, for example, where that didn't pan out because of the input from the public. So mm-hmm.
yeah.
it is good to see that government still works. It mm-hmm. still works sometimes, right?
Right. Transparency. It's about transparency. Right. It's about making sure that there's a robust input process, stakeholder right. process.
In the Lehigh Valley, at any point in time, there's data that shows there's at least 300 or so unhoused people who are experiencing homelessness. What can our federal government do to start helping out? I know that the local, there are organizations, the cities, there are volunteers. You know, it seems like there could be some federal money that could be helping our community too. Or what do you think about that?
I actually have experience in the issue of homelessness because, first off, I served on the Homeless Veterans Task Force for Lehigh County. I also was a volunteer for North Penn Legal Services, specifically around topics that had to do with homelessness. And I led the Children's Coalition of the Lehigh Valley, and I was advocating for prevention programs and services so we could keep families and children off the streets. You asked what are ways that the federal government could intervene, and there's so many that there's a lot that can be done. But we're short on time, and I'll give you examples, right? One way is to ensure that folks are not unjustly evicted, that we right now don't have an office, a federal office of tenant rights. All right. So where people could be held accountable and they know their rights. I want to go to Congress and establish that, the Federal Office of Tenant Rights. We also know that there were cuts to legal aid programs, that North Penn Legal Services, the organization that provides legal aid to folks who are low income, who cannot afford a lawyer, received a cut from the federal government to do their work. And they're working specifically on housing matters, ensuring that people don't get evicted and end up on the streets. So right. These are concrete ways that we could do something to ensure that we prevent homelessness. But we also have, we need to support nonprofit organizations, sure, and create more public-private partnerships. I attended a forum on homelessness and housing in general, and I heard from one of the local developers who avails himself of the low-income housing tax credits. That is a federal tax credit that he said is very effective, and we could have more, expand that, and we could have even more tax credits to be able to incentivize low-income housing. But he shared with me that every state administers it a little different, and some states are easier to work with than others. Why not have reform the system to ensure that the states are not interpreting it a certain way, and that there's more of a level playing field, and that there's not a lot of bureaucracy associated with how the states then administer that federal tax credit?
Yeah, it's so complicated, right? I want to make sure that we mention there are so many people in the Lehigh Valley who are working on this issue on a day-to-day basis. So I don't want to take anything away from them, of course.
Oh, yes. We have on that panel that I was at, that I attended on housing, we had New Bethany's. And they're phenomenal. Mark Riddle has been great. Amazing. We have the United Way that funds different organizations that are working on this. So someone from North Penn Legal Services was on that panel. So there's a lot of good folks working together, and that's promising, right? In some communities, Absolutely. They don't work well together. We actually are really blessed in the Lehigh Valley that we have a really good a safety net program where we have a United Way that is bringing a lot of nonprofits together, and they're working well together. But nonetheless, the need is so great that we need the federal government to do better, because they just can't fill that void. It's good that they're working together. It's great. But you know, when the federal government in the summer with the budget bill cut healthcare to 16,000 people in our district, that cut food assistance, SNAP benefits to over 6,000. Those nonprofits can't possibly fill the void.
Sure. They're not like Scrooge McDuck here. You know, we go, oh, we'll just go to our coffers and get more. Sure. Like they're running on razor thin margins too.
So the federal government has to step up. We need someone in Congress that's representing us, that's doing the people's work, that is a public servant, that's listening to them, that's addressing their needs, and is prioritizing them, putting them first, instead of giving trillions in tax cuts to billionaires, because that's what happened over the summer with that Republican budget bill that was passed, that Ryan McKenzie voted for.
Yeah, man, my insurance went up.
Speaking facts.
I had some creative budgeting at the end of this year, let's just say that. All right, the hard stuff's over. Last question. The Lehigh Valley, and you're not, you know, you don't have to pick a favorite. I'm not asking you to pick a favorite, but just somewhere that you love to be. I really love the concept of a third place. So not your work, not your house, but somewhere else that is not those places that you feel at home, you love to be in the Lehigh Valley, that you connect with. It can literally be anywhere. What is that place for you?
I do like my church. I've been going to the Cathedral Church of the Nativity, to the Spanish service, and I go with my parents. It feels great to be around people who are just very down to earth, just, you know, salt of the earth folks. And the church itself, it to me is really embodying like the you know, teachings of the Bible of mm-hmm. what Jesus taught us. So it is a gathering place for so many other groups throughout the week. I have gone to housing committees that mm-hmm. the Community Action Development Corporation of Bethlehem has, and they have a meeting space there at the church. So it's, they're living their values, and I like to be around people that do that, that walk the walk and talk the talk and walk the walk, because that's what I'm about.
Well, Carol, I appreciate you. We appreciate you. It says a lot about someone's character to put their hat in the ring, especially now, at least in my opinion. Thank you so much for answering some of our questions, and best of luck in this election.
Thank you, George. I really love to listen to you, and I love the energy that you put out into the universe. You were there when I launched on May 1st, and I appreciated the questions you asked me. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love it. Love to be a part of it. Honestly, this is all about championing the Lehigh Valley, and we're looking forward to it. So, Carol, thank you so much.
Thank you.